Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If your small business is booming, you might say,
cha-ching,
but you should say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And we'll help your growing business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
Hello and welcome to the Rush Markowski Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. A lot to get into here on a Monday. Let's not waste any time. Let's bring in our main man, Willie Ramirez. Willie, how are you?
What's happening, my friend? It is Monday, but as we discussed on Friday, I believe, there are no days of the week in what we do. The news never stops. Didn't stop this weekend. It is nonstop, and I couldn't be more pleased in the month of June.
So, Willie, you and the folks haven't seen that, they got to go follow you on social. You have an amazing setup to watch all the WNBA games and listen to football games when we get to the fall. But we had a very crazy, dramatic, soap opera-like action-packed weekend, led by, I believe it was a 9 a.m. tip, that the Indiana Fever-Chicago Sky game. That, you know, listen, there was a lot of hype going into that game, and it is getting national coverage, mainly because sort of, again, people had been talking about for quite some time, maybe some of the hate that Caitlin Clark has gotten, but then we kind of saw it on full display in terms of what was perhaps a cheap shot against her. Wanted you to get your thoughts. Again, we've talked about her, but you know, when something like that happens, you got, you know, national pundits chiming in and a lot of people talking around the country about, wait a minute, what's happening here? All right, I would love for you to set the scene, but also tell me your thoughts on what happened to Caitlin Clark. Again, she gets her first home win, so she got her second win of the season. So positive for her and the team, but not a great look for the league, I think, on that one play.
Yeah, it was an unfortunate circumstance, because you know what it took away from more than anything? It started off with the Indiana Fever hosting the Chicago Sky, which meant Angel Reese visiting Caitlin Clark, their first showdown as professionals. It's transitioned into Caitlin Clark versus Kennedy Carter. Which CC do you side with? The unfortunate part was the fantastic and beautiful game of basketball that we saw in a battle between former teammates in Camila Cardoso's professional debut against Aaliyah Boston, two former South Carolina stars. Why could we not have the focus? Why could that not be the storyline coming out of it? Tragic. But what we saw was Kennedy Carter reacting to finally being fed up with antics, verbal antics of Caitlin Clark, which we have seen, which we have heard, basic trash talking on the court. So my first reaction is, if you can't take the heat, then don't play, because it's all competition in every level girls, boys, men, women, high school, college, you name it, there is going to be trash talking. You cannot let your physical temperament get the best of you when you're dealing with stuff like this. Yeah. And that's what happened. We did see, yes, we did see Caitlin Clark jarring away, but it doesn't call for you to do what you did. Kennedy Carter coming up behind her on an inbounds and just absolutely checking her. My power rankings came out on WGRamirez.com today, and I said specifically, hey, well, there's if I can say one thing, it ranks right up there with some of the checks we've seen in the Stanley Cup playoffs because, I mean, she dropped her. Have I seen highlights and memes of Caitlin Clark flopping? Yes. Have I seen her talking smack? Yes. But LeBron James, one of the best floppers there is. You know it. You're there. You're in L.A. You've been to Laker games. You know him. The NBA guys have perfected flopping. Soccer guys have perfected flopping. All of this that's taking place is a part of the game. What's not part of it is retaliation outside of the NHL, and that's where the word enforcer comes in. So all of a sudden now people were tweeting out the Fever need to go get an enforcer. Kennedy Carter started tweeting. She goes into the press conference, says, I'm not discussing any of this, but yet she goes on Twitter and starts discussing it. So it was an incident that turned ugly, and now it's carried into Monday morning conversation. And it's not a good look, number one. Number two, what really sucks about this is all of a sudden, Arash, the people that were out there claiming that there are cheap shots and there's inner workings in the WNBA that don't like Caitlin Clark and Becky Hammon and Asia Wilson screaming a couple weeks ago, that's not true. That's just simply not true. This has nothing to do with that and the black and the white and the this and the that and whatever it was that they were defending and saying. This is that type of play that stirs, it doesn't prove anybody's right, but it stirs up conversation and brings it back to life.
Yeah, you touched on it, the enforcer part of it. Matt Barnes talked about it. Some other pundits have talked about it. Again, not generally something that is done in the NBA, you know, back in the day, if you remember, like the Bad Boys, but, you know, those guys could actually play ball, you know, former head coach of Las Vegas, Bill Laimbeer, was an enforcer. If anyone got near, like Isaiah Thomas, Bill Laimbeer would do something.
We know why Steph Curry's protected. Oh,
Draymond,
right?
Got
Draymond Green. Yeah. I mean, come on.
No, but do you think if this continues, and again, a weird spot to have on your team. I mean, you want someone who can play, put the ball through the hoop, and defend. Do they need someone like that? Do they need an enforcer?
No, what they need is that when she gets dropped like that, Arash, go back, watch the highlight. Everybody go watch the highlight. Where were her teammates to just run over and pick her up?
Yeah, there we go.
I've told this story numerous times. LeBron James comes to Las Vegas for his summer camp where I don't know if he still does it, but it was a Cashman Field in the convention area. There were four courts set up, side by side, back to back, and LeBron basically gets taped up, and he goes from court to court and plays like a quarter with each team.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget the first time I watched one of these camps and the first time a kid hit the deck, he started to get up and LeBron said, no, stay there. I got you. And he ran over and he picked him up. And it was kind of like sending a message like, this is what you do. Like every little nuance of inner game workings of team, you know, of sportsmanship and teamwork. And it sort of rubbed off on these high school players. And I'll always remember that. It was one of the things I was feeding information and coloring the scene for Tim Reynolds, who was writing an updated story, because this was when LeBron was going to announce, I believe, that he was going back to Cleveland.
Mm.
So we were following, it was the LeBron watch, because it was during the summer league. Anyway, getting away from what we're talking about, the bottom line is, here he doesn't even know these kids, but he's teaching them, always be there for your teammates. Nobody rushed to Caitlin Clark to lift her up off the ground, help her up off the ground.
Yeah.
So I don't know necessarily if an enforcer is needed on that team. I mean, Aaliyah Boston's tough. Nalissa Smith's tough. I mean, Kelsey Mitchell's a dog. They've got players that don't take mess.
There we go. Thank you.
but the fact of the matter is, what it did raise an eyebrow was as if are her own teammates getting tired of the the not her, but this, you know, this marathon and gauntlet of a schedule to start the season. They played yesterday. They don't play again until Friday. I think what she needs is isolation from everybody. Mm-hmm. She needs practice, and then that's it. Get her treatment and go home. Relax. Be, you know, just when I say be quiet, I don't mean be quiet, shut your mouth, but I mean just be in a state of quiet.
Mm-hmm.
She needs to clear her head. Her teammates need to clear their brain of the Caitlin Clark media circus. I mean, it's, I think the Fever, this is a much needed week off. They need more than that with everything that they've gone through. Think about it, Arash. They played 11 games. The Las Vegas Aces have played six.
It's nuts. And to your point, I think they will get their break. Obviously, you know, there's the Olympic break, but you know, with them beginning the season like this, they will not just, you know, just do the math here. Like, they're not going to close the season with as many games as some of these other teams will, like Las Vegas. Again, when you don't play that many games to start the season, you're going to have to make that up some way, somehow. Not a lot of talking, again, to your rankings at WGRamirez.com. Again, a lot of talk coming into the season about the Fever, about New York, about Las Vegas. Listen, just when you turn on the TV, and not a lot of talk about the Connecticut Sun. They are the number one team. They are undefeated. They're 8-0. What do you like about the Connecticut Sun? And is this something that can be sustained? I mean, they're probably maybe the best team right now, but do you put them in the same class as a New York, a Las Vegas, teams like that?
There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about that. We're talking about a team that was just in the WNBA Finals two seasons ago. Mm-hmm. Then last season it was, you know, Aces beat them, then the Aces beat the Liberty. So, you know, and they were in the conference finals last year, losing to the Liberty. So this is a team that's loaded with veterans in terms of Alyssa Thomas, DeJuana Bonner, Dejanay Carrington. I mean, they have Breezy Jones, who was the sixth woman of the year a couple years back. She missed the season last year with an Achilles. So it's not surprising to me of how well they're doing. Is it surprising that they're the only undefeated team? Yeah, I'm not surprised that they're undefeated. I'm surprised maybe that the Aces or the Liberty aren't undefeated right there with them when you look at the losses that both those teams have endured. But what I like is that Stephanie White coaches her team well. She lets them each sort of fall into their role and has blended the chemistry perfectly and how it needs to be done. Alyssa Thomas is having an MVP candidate-like season. DeJuana Bonner setting milestones. Dejanay Carrington should be up for most improved player of the year with De'Erica Hamby from the LA Sparks. So I just love that the way this team plays with confidence, with physicality. They do it the right ways in terms of just, you know, different people picking up the pieces in terms of different roles at different parts of the game. You just never really know. DeJuana Bonner's been on a heater the last couple of weeks. She was the Eastern Conference Player of the Week last week. The week before that, it was Alyssa Thomas. So, I mean, it wouldn't shock me if someone from the Sun won it again. I mean, DeJuana Bonner had a big week. So they're just really playing cohesive basketball with elements from every part of the game that you need, whether it's perimeter shooting, whether it's inside dominance, whether it's on defense. They're the probably right now the best defensive team in the league, them and the Minnesota Lynx, but I give the edge to Connecticut.
Las Vegas is 4-2 to start the season. Again, no Chelsea Gray. We've both talked about how important she is to what they want to do. Heartbreaking loss or a tough loss on the road to Atlanta. Again, Willie, they just don't seem right without Chelsea Gray. And I was still, and I don't know if this affected them, but I kept thinking coming into this season, it'll be great to see Candace Parker back, because while they won without her, they were dominant with her. She retires right before the season starts. Chelsea Gray has been hurt. She has not played. I mean, this was a deep team, but at some point, not having, again, Candace is retired. She's not coming back, but we don't know when Chelsea is going to come back. Maybe you have an update, but we don't know how she's going to look when she comes back. Like, I'm a little, and I want to get your thoughts here, a little concerned about this team going for a third straight title. I don't see it right now.
No, and we've talked about this, but I firmly believe that it's not as much on them although they could be playing better defensively. And they have improved since the opening week of the season, where they were allowing the second most points in the game. Now they're allowing the sixth most points, which isn't great. And Becky Hammon shouldn't be pleased with that, but she should be pleased with the improvement since week one. But the rest of the league is catching up.
Yeah.
The rest of the league made moves. What did the Aces do? They pulled off the surprise draft pick of the 2024 WNBA draft with Kate Martin, in terms of surprise and meaning that she's the rookie that's making the most noise that people didn't expect to be making noise. She's not making more nor any more noise than Angel Reese, Cam Brink, or Caitlin Clark, for that matter, when she's on a heater. But other than that, what did they do to upgrade? Nothing. What did the Liberty do to upgrade? Nothing, really. I mean, a couple of offseason moves here or there, but it's nothing earth-shattering like what we've seen with other teams. Connecticut, you can say the same thing, but again, they added Breezy Jones back, Brianna Jones, who missed all last year. That's a major addition to that lineup, a component that they missed drastically last year. The rest of the league has improved. Atlanta, you were talking about a team that brought in a potential Hall of Famer in Tina Charles. Ariel Powers, who was in Jackie Young's head, there's no doubt about it. A couple of years ago, she was in. She dropped Kelsey Plum in the middle of Mandalay Bay on a drive, and Kelsey Plum jumped up, got in her face. They were USA teammates, so after the game, it was all, you know, they embraced. But let's not forget, last year, Tanisha Wright fronted Kelsey Plum and called her out of her name in the handshake line. So there's a little bit of tension between that, those teams. But Atlanta improved drastically. And you know who they still have on the shelf that's going to be coming back? Former LA Spark Jordan Canada, who's a menace on defense and a facilitator and an absolute gem. She can throw dimes on the offensive end. So Atlanta's an improved team. Indiana Fever, obviously, we know how they're improved. They're going to get it together at some point. They need this week off. Seattle Storm, Nneka Ogumike, Skylar Diggins-Smith, back, you know, here with this team, with Jewel Lloyd, Nika Mule, once she gets going. So, I mean, we could go up and down the lineup. Phoenix Mercury with Natasha Cloud coming in. The rest of the league is catching up. Did Las Vegas Aces, you know, I'm not making any excuses for them, because there is none to make. They need to realize that the rest of the league is caught up, and they have to figure out how to make the right adjustments. They're no longer the dominant team. They've had plenty of time to rest because they played the least amount of games. They played four straight at home. They played two on the road. They don't play again until Wednesday at Dallas. I mean, talk about a team that's had all the rest in the world. Indiana has a legitimate gripe with the league if they wanted to take it to them, say, hey, what's going on? You want to exploit this young girl? That's fine, in terms of, when I mean exploit, you know, exposure and TV and interviews. But the way that you're cramming 11 games inside of whatever it was, 12 games in 20 days, is ridiculous.
No, yeah. I mean, we just, when you looked at that schedule, but also the travel schedule, you know, just from
8,000 miles altogether back and forth to and from Indianapolis, 8,000 in less than 3 weeks.
Yeah,
the Aces are just going to play their third game on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's wild. So listen, I mean, let's see what kind of a role they go on now to kind of finish the season. Again, at the very least, and you brought this up the last time we talked, it's not just about time to breathe and rest. There's no practice time. Like, no. When you're playing once every 2 days, or even less than that, well, right? You said like 1.8 days or something.
1.8 days was their days off. So they're playing, you know, that's how much time they're not getting that second day in terms of full day. You know, they're playing one every 1.8 days.
Wanted to switch gears before we close out this segment. The Los Angeles Sparks, they're kind of right there at the bottom of the league, 2-6, dropped the, they got blown out by Phoenix over the weekend. When you're talking about a young team like this, you're looking for bright spots. Obviously, Cam Brink has played extremely well, just has to stay out of foul trouble. Rekia Jackson is finally in the starting lineup. She looks more and more comfortable. What's a successful season for this team? Again, as you're looking to kind of really start from scratch here, not a playoff team, but what is success for these Sparks this season?
It's going to be hard to get to 500. I can't remember what their win total is, but what I can tell you is that a successful season would be is if they can get to 500.
Yeah.
If they can pull that off, I think that you could consider that a success. I'm stalling here because I'm going to pull up their their win total is 10.5.
Okay.
Hitting 500 is 20-20. They've got two wins, so they're 20% of the way toward their total. They're on pace to go over their posted total.
Okay.
Personally, I think that they can get there as far as over the posted total. I don't know about getting to 20-20. That would be a huge success. And here's the thing. It's not a knock on them, though. This is about how good we're seeing. Think about the Western Conference. You knew the Aces were going to be good. You had to know what Cheryl Reeve is doing in Minnesota. There's two. Seattle was being touted as a top four team with what they brought in. The dark horse was Phoenix.
Yeah.
All four have been, they're above 500. So it's tough to be in that Western Conference. That's tough. So I'd say 20-20 is a huge success, but get over the win total. 15 wins, I think you can be satisfied with, and anything after that's a bonus.
Yeah, because what you're going to have, and they're not a part of this conversation, I don't think, but, the Washington Mystics probably are thinking of, tank for Paige Buchers, Paige Buckets, and obviously Juju the year after that. Like, you're going to start seeing teams try to get that next big star. And again, these next two drafts coming up will have that big star. And I do love, by the way, that UConn and USC will play a home-and-home these next two seasons. All right, let's leave it there for now. When we come back, Willie will come back talking about the Las Vegas Raiders, and he's going to be out there at camp. A lot of questions are around this team, probably centered on the quarterback position. Who's going to be under center for the Silver and Black this season? So we'll talk about all that and more when we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 in Southern California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
Welcome back to the Rush Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment or want to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas, or Hawaii, call our hotline 310-400-0340. All right, welcoming back in for the Sporting Tribune, Willie Ramirez. Willie covers it all in Las Vegas. He will be out at Raiders headquarters in Henderson this week. They got mini camp. Biggest question, Willie, who's going to be under center for this team? I think that they were hoping for a big-time draft pick, but Gardner Minshew is sort of the big addition that they had. Your thoughts on who will be the starting quarterback for the Silver and Black this season?
Pretty sure it's going to be Gardner Minshew, unless they're waiting toward OTAs and training camp or in OTAs.
Yeah.
Unless they're waiting for official training camp to start, and all of a sudden there's some big announcement that they're bringing somebody in.
Yeah.
Because I do think that they probably hoped that somebody was around when their draft pick came or something was going to happen on draft day. And when it didn't, that's why they grabbed Gardner Minshew when they did. They're definitely opening up the quarterback competition. I think that the statement that we saw from Antonio Pierce when he took over for Josh McDaniels and immediately said AOC is our starting quarterback, yeah, and that was it for Garoppolo, that he has belief that this kid has some sort of potential. It's got to be a message in that from that situation. Not necessarily that, I'm dealing with the cards that have been dealt with me. He was emphatic that this was our guy the rest of the way. So he believes in Aiden O'Connell and maybe in his future and maybe with what's surrounding him, it could bring out the best in him. But he also knows that what Gardner Minshew has done So, you know, I mean, he's going into what, his sixth year, I believe. He's got 5 years of experience. He's been in 49 games. He's started 37 of them. Two of the season in which he's played regular games, he's been a starter majority of them. His rookie season, 12 out of 14 with Jacksonville. Last year, 13 out of 17 games that he appeared in, he started for the Colts. So, you know, I mean, it's coming down to the competition. I personally think that we're going to see Gardner Minshew as this starter for the Raiders as it looks right now as far as the roster. Also in camp is Anthony Brown Jr. and Carter Bradley, which I don't think that they either one stands a chance against the other two. So, yeah, I'll be interested to see what they have to say. I'll be out there tomorrow to talk to Gardner Minshew for a story I'm working on for the Spokesman Review up in Spokane, Washington. They still cover their former college guys up there pretty heavily, and he went to Washington State. So
I definitely remember that. By the way, I mean, like, the last two teams remaining in the Pac-12, I don't know why they're still calling it the Pac-12, but they are.
I do get emails, and so do you.
Pac-12, right? Exactly. And so Washington State and Oregon State remaining in the Pac-12. But that, by the way, that is great. I was lucky enough to go to all 12 Pac-12 schools. Spokane was up there. Not a easy trip if you're coming from Los Angeles or Las Vegas or Hawaii. But what is it? And I brought this up with the Sparks in the previous segment. But going into this season, when you're looking at the league and you're looking at that division in particular, where you got the Chiefs, you know the Chargers are going to be improved. You know, you got to imagine the Broncos are going to be improved. What's a successful season for the Raiders? They, you know, look like they could be a playoff team a year ago. Do you still view that as success? Like, does this team need to make the playoffs?
I don't know, because it's Antonio Pierce's first full season. I think if they were to get, I think if that question is never posed by people like us, like, what's a successful exactly season, right? If that's never proposed, then I think that a playoffs is like a delight to the fans and a bonus. I think I can answer the same way I did about the Sparks, in that, you know, you got to go over 500 and you got to aim to get over your, you know, too many people put it on the odds makers these days, and that, well, their win total is this, so if they get over, you know, and if they get under, well, it's a disappointment. But by whose standards? The bookmakers? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, to be honest with you, because I haven't been out there as much as I used to be when I was, you know, going really hard for the Associated Press. And then when Mark Anderson was brought in as the full-time guy for AP, he's been out there more than I have, you know, last year and then this year. I did spend some time out there last year, a little bit during training camp. But so I'll get a better vibe tomorrow, and I'll talk to some of the guys, and, you know, and then I'll talk to some of the reporters, and as the summer comes on, you sort of get a better idea as to what the expectations are. I've never been somebody who talks about win totals and expectations in April, May, and June. No. After the draft, during rookie camp, during OTAs. June, you got the mandatory. Next week, you have the mandatory camp from the 11th through the 13th. But once training camp opens and you kind of get a better idea of the chemistry and what the locker room's like and what these guys are talking about, what they're, you know, that's when you can place your own expectations on them. But I think realistically, if you were to ask last year's worst team in the league what their expectations are this year, every team's going to say the playoffs. So I think that's the goal. That's the realistic goal, that you have to set the standard that there is nothing short of the playoffs that is considered a successful season.
Willie, as we're getting ready for the Stanley Cup final, I can't help but think back to last year when we were covering the Florida Panthers against the Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah.
And we got to know the Florida.
You and I have covered two Stanley Cup finals together, by the way.
Yeah. By the way, I mean, you know, two in, what is it, six, in the first 6 years for the Vegas Golden Knights? Pretty Cup amazing.
Six, yeah. It's how this friendship began.
Oh, love it. Yeah. Listen, I mean, you took me under your wing. You showed me Pierros, and I will be always forever grateful for that. Your thoughts, I guess. I mean, again, Vegas isn't there, but we are familiar with Florida in terms of covering them last year during the Cup final. You know, I think Connor McDavid is sort of like the big, you know, draw in terms of people saying, man, like Edmonton versus Florida, and it's not really Miami, like the teams in Fort Lauderdale or whatever. So it's there's a little bit of concern here with this matchup. Like, will people be watching? Your thoughts on it?
I think people will be watching. I don't want to hear about the, you know, the I don't think that there's been a Stanley Cup outside of the Golden Knights Capitals in the Golden Knights inaugural season because of what they pulled off.
Yeah.
Where outside people like what we're seeing with WNBA and Caitlin Clark, all of a sudden there are people that would never even watch women's basketball. Forget about the people that weren't WNBA fans, but they watched college women's basketball, and now they're watching. I'm talking about like just outsiders. I don't think that there's really been outsiders from hockey that are watching the Stanley Cup outside of that year since then. You know what I mean? They've wanted to watch. They wanted to see what the Golden Knights were going to do in that first season. At this point, your hockey fans are hockey fans, and I think there's fantastic storylines here with Paul Maurice, the coach of Florida Panthers, Matthew Tkachuk, the revenge in their mind in terms of getting back from last year and being able to just get there. It's one thing to be able to repeat, but it's also tough to just get there a second straight year, which the Panthers have done. And then you got the Connor McDavid finally getting into a Stanley Cup final, finally getting a chance to get his ring, something that, you know, obviously Oilers fans and diehard hockey fans are happy for. I've been totally against the Oilers this postseason, saying, you know, each year, each series, picking against them, saying that they're going to disappoint their fans. So maybe that's why they're there. They're proving me wrong. But, you know, I did pick the Stars over the Rangers. So my two teams got to the conference finals, but then bowed out.
I mean,
I personally, this has nothing to do with the way, here's the thing. I will say this. I know I just said I've been picking against the Oilers because they've coached or choked, but I am picking the Panthers because I just think it's so hard to get back there. This team is determined. And if you think about the storylines in the Eastern Conference, there was the New York Rangers as the President's Cup, the Carolina Hurricanes in that offense, the Boston Bruins and what they were able to do. And here Florida is back again defying everybody's odds. So I like the Panthers to win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I think it'll be a fun cup. We are familiar with Florida from Vegas playing them a year ago. Wanted to get your thoughts again. We were very familiar with this in Los Angeles when we did not have professional football. There were always, always, always two sites in competition for where the future football team would play. You know, for years it was downtown, then it was in Inglewood, Carson, whatnot. The same thing is shaping up with the NBA in Las Vegas, where you have one potential site, obviously very close to me, near the Sahara, kind of in between Sahara and the Fontainebleau on the north end of the strip in Las Vegas. And the other is the Tim Lai Wiki Oakview Group, which is a little bit south of the Mandalay Bay.
Yeah.
You know which one that I'm favoring, just so you could park your car and we could like walk the games together. But what is I think, I am biased here. I think the North Strip has potential. People have been saying that for years. I do think with the opening of the Fontainebleau, the money that they put into the Sahara, the other things that they're trying to do out there, like the North Strip could become something. I do think it needs a, whether it's a stadium or an arena, they do need something like that to really kind of plant the flag. Again, I've said for a while, and I still believe it today, that is a better site than the Tropicana for the Oakland A's. But well, wanted to get your thoughts. Again, no one knows the Strip. No one knows Las Vegas quite as well as you do. If this is your franchise, where do you want your home to be?
Here's the problem. I'm not a big fan of how they've just crammed the strip because what is it done to the infrastructure and traffic?
Yeah.
You know, they've done nothing to improve the roads until after everything is established, right? So F1's established. Now let's go tear up the roads. Tropicana, the off ramp off the 15 has been under construction for the last year. So that's been a mess. They're trying to rebuild all these intersections that come off of Interstate 15. So if you were to do it where you're talking about off Sahara and Las Vegas Boulevard, it's such a small, I mean, it's such a small intersection per se, you know, it's not big. So you're going to cause major roadblocks, major traffic, you know, and they could figure all that out, but it's a matter of improvement on the roads before anything. The only reason why the further north makes sense at times is because there's still open land and there's not a lot of people exiting Blue Diamond right now. You know, it's not a lot of traffic like you see on Russell and Tropicana. Like I remember when Russell was just a tiny little nothing road. Now that's a major off ramp. You got Allegiant there. And Mandalay Convention Center at the other side, Mandalay Bay to get off of the Russell, to go around Frank Sinatra Drive, to get into the arena. It's interesting because before there was any pro sports team here, when Oscar Goodman was the mayor, the big site that was always talked about was downtown, the Union Pacific Railroad. Yeah. There was like a 64-acre parcel off the 15, but it was spacious. You had, you know, there was plenty of room to build roads out and parking. And so, and you had downtown parking garages, and there are more parking garages downtown with less foot traffic. And it's not the Las Vegas Strip. I always thought that downtown somewhere made sense because they've done so much to rebuild. I remember when Oscar Goodman took office and said, and created the downtown redevelopment project. He wanted to restore downtown because it's always been a major part of Las Vegas. The Fremont Street Experience is there because of Oscar Goodman. I've always said pro sports is in Las Vegas because of Oscar Goodman, not Steve Sisolak, not Sandoval, not all the current politicians. They just tipped it over. Mm-hmm. Oscar Goodman brought everything to the ledge for everybody to tip it over. He's the one that initiated the conversations, and he's the one that always said the downtown would be a great spot. Cashman Center, where there's a convention hall and where the Aviators used to play, and then the XFL was playing there, demolish that and build a stadium there. You've already got, you know, it's already become used to where traffic flow. They would just need to, you know, come off of Washington. There's some seedy areas in and around there, but I mean, we could go to a lot of cities, Arash. You know best. You've traveled to many stadiums where three blocks away from a stadium, you better not go down the wrong alleyway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I know why you want it there near Las Vegas Boulevard, and they built up the real estate on South Las Vegas Boulevard. Yes, I understand why further south, it makes sense because of, like I said, there's a little more open space. Downtown to me is still a viable product. I know arenas, people that are, you know, groups that are trying to build that or franchises that want to bring sports, they want to be part of the downtown or the part of the Las Vegas Boulevard skyline, but downtown, don't overlook that. And then you have these other places around the country where, you know, like Arizona, right? A lot of people realize, like, what is it? How many places? Like, I think Chase is in Phoenix, but
so the arena
stadiums in Glendale,
football stadiums in Glendale, where the hockey team used to play, was in Glendale. That didn't really work out for them. Glendale, unfortunately, was really, you know, it's fine if you're talking about a football game where you're going there, you know, 10 Sundays and.
But what I'm talking about is this. In L.A., they're the Los Angeles Rams and Los Angeles Chargers, but they're in Inglewood.
Exactly.
There is so much open land toward the Las Vegas Motor Speedway north off the 15, where, you know, complete off of North Las Vegas, BLM land. There's tons of property out there. They just don't – everybody just wants to be greedy and be part of Las Vegas Boulevard and part of the Strip. The bottom line is – if you're coming to Vegas or you're going to the game, I really don't think that the fans care that it's on the Strip. They just want the aesthetic to show a picture and go, look. But nobody's going to look at it and go, oh, I want to go there because I want to be part of the skyline.
You know, it's the convenience, though. Like, yes. even if listen, if you're not a local, again, if you're a local, you don't, you know, whether it's in Henderson or Summerlin or downtown, you're going to drive there and it's going to be fine. But if you're a tourist, there is the allure of checking in at the Wynn or the Fountain Blue or Resorts World or whatever, and basically being able to walk to the game. And then once the game is over, walk to nearby, you know, casino or pub or whatnot. The downtown, you're 100% right. And by the way, downtown is different than it was back when Oscar Goodman was pushing that. Now that Carolyn Goodman is pushing that, downtown has revitalized. When you look at Circa, for example, and what is being done there. I am surprised that more people or more of the folks who own the casinos haven't gotten together again. And for the purpose of this conversation, real quick, I'm going to combine the North Strip and downtown to be like, hey, we can't have like another arena or stadium built on the south side or on the resort corridor. Like, we got to band together and get one of these things. I mean, is that, and again, I think, listen, there's no one more invested in sports than Derek Stevens, and he's really planted his flag in downtown. But I agree with you, because if you're in downtown at this point, A, it's more convenient for locals, but also B, at this point, like, there's plenty of stuff to do. Maybe that wasn't the case. You know, again, there was like Galway stuff to do, but there's, depending on what you want, you know, with the refurbished D and the Circa and the Plaza, there's more happening there, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and that started with Oscar with the Fremont Street Experience, and then the gateway into downtown from like Sahara, driving north on Las Vegas Boulevard, just adding the shrubs and adding the signage and saying this is historic, this and you know, pointing out. I mean, hey, you know how long of a line they're going to get at the pawn that they get at the pawn shop for Pawn Stars? Yeah. I mean, that's a tourist location. That's people that are staying at Mandalay Bay. They have no problem traveling down to there because they want to see that place that they see on TV in their little town out of Nebraska. You know what I mean? They want to see those places. So downtown's a viable spot. There's plenty of things to do. It's not that far from the Strip. You're already, you know, you're in town. Yes, I get it. You want to walk up and down the Strip, leave your hotel, and you're right there. But downtown wouldn't be a bad spot. And a lot of the things that you can do as far as gambling, you know, drinking, I find it interesting that if you're staying on the Strip and there's a big event at Fremont Street Experience, you don't have a trouble going down there, but the people don't want to stay downtown because they don't want to travel to the Strip. So it's kind of hypocritical, but I don't know. We'll see what happens here in the next few years. I really hope is that we don't get a location where it's going to cause us locals another hassle to drive into town.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I know you'll find the shortcut regardless of where they put it. But yes, like, you would like a convenient arena for locals to go and enjoy their team and not get stuck in the traffic on the Strip. Timeline-wise, however, with the new the NBA media rights deal, you know that Las Vegas and Seattle are just around the corner. Again, the commissioner has been very clear. Once we get these media rights deals done, which will happen this offseason, this summer, then the focus at some point will switch to Las Vegas and Seattle. And I think we're both in agreement those are going to be the next two teams. Willie, we will check into you when you go check out the Las Vegas Raiders. So we'll have you back on again this week. That's all the time we have for today. Until tomorrow, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe and stay healthy.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
If your small business has a problem, you could say,
ugh, just my luck.
But you should say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And we'll help get you back in business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.